If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all.
Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration will permit marketers to label tea as healthy. Extreme weather depressed 2024 tea yields globally, and tea bags are found to release billions of nanoparticles. Plus, tea and peace. Hundreds of tea professionals, educators, and enthusiasts will travel from around the world to attend the UC Davis Tea Institute's 10th Anniversary Colloquium on January 30th at UC Davis. This year's theme is Tea and Peace, Bringing Communities Together. Joining us today is Professor Catherine Burnett, an expert in East Asian studies and the art and cultural history of China, and founder and director of the Institute. She describes how, in 2012, their mutual fascination with tea brought together a research cluster of faculty and librarians to establish a group that would become the Institute and organize its first colloquium. The collaboration inspired an innovative global educational hub offering advanced studies, continuing education leading to professional certifications, and a new book series, Global Tea Studies, by Brill Publishing. Plans include constructing an on-campus tea center equipped with a sensory theater, processing center, exhibition hall, classrooms, and space for public display of tea art and cultural materials. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, ruled in December that manufacturers of tea made from the Camellia sinensis plant may display a healthy nutrient claim so long as the beverage contains fewer than 5 calories per 12-ounce serving. The updated final rule automatically applies to unsweetened and lightly sweetened coffee and bottled water, but not herbal infusions. Some foods previously labeled healthy may no longer make that claim. Excluded categories include white bread, highly sweetened yogurt, and highly sweetened cereal. Several food groups automatically qualify if they meet specific limits on added sugars, saturated fat, and sodium. The rule applies to true teas, black, green, oolong, white, dark, yellow, and pu'er. Non-alcoholic ready-to-drink tea, carbonated and sparkling tea, and tea seltzers that meet the low or no sweetener test also qualify. Peter Goji, president of the Tea Association of the USA, writes, quote, "We are thrilled that the FDA's new ruling officially recognizes unsweetened tea as a healthy choice. For decades, we've known that tea delivers significant health benefits, and now consumers can more easily identify it as a healthy choice right on the label. This designation validates tea's role in a balanced diet and encourages more Americans to reach for this naturally refreshing, calorie-free beverage," end quote. FDA first authorized the voluntary use of the Healthy Claim in 1994 as part of a Nutrition Labeling and Education Act of 1990. As scientific understanding of nutrition evolved, dietary guidelines shifted due to concerns about sweeteners, saturated fats, and additives, leading the FDA to review what constituted healthy. During public hearings in 2016, tea stakeholders sought permission to market tea as healthy. A draft guidance defining the characteristics of healthy foods followed. In 2022, the FDA proposed a new rule to redefine the claim of healthy nutrient content, aligning it with the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. The guidelines are tea-friendly, but water is recommended with meals. Tea has a 5,000-year history of benefiting mankind. Researchers relying on extensive human trials cite reduced risk associated with inflammation, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, and high blood sugar. Tea contains bioactive flavanthriols, flavonoids, amino acids, polyphenols like catechins and theophylline, antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals. The rule goes into effect on February 25, 2025, and businesses have 3 years to comply. FDA announced it will provide additional guidance documents, FAQs, and online webinars to meet compliance obligations. Business Insight. After 8 years of review, tea promoters were pleased to see that the FDA rule permitting the term healthy includes several derivatives, such as healthful, healthier, healthiest, healthily, healthiness, and healthfulness. The next step is to amend the Dietary Guidelines for Americans to include 2 cups of tea daily. In 2024, climate change significantly impacted global tea production, with several key tea growing regions experiencing an additional 41 days of dangerous heat. The final averages are still being calculated, but 2024 reported the hottest summer, the hottest autumn, and regional record highs, making it, quote, virtually certain, end quote, to be the hottest year ever recorded. The alarming trend is attributed to human-induced activities compounded by natural phenomena such as El Niño. China experienced its hottest year in 2024 as weeks of record-breaking heat waves depressed yield and lowered quality. India also recorded the hottest year since record-keeping began in 1901, resulting in a 20% decline in greenleaf production during peak summer months. Bangladesh and Australia also experienced extended highs exceeding 40 degrees Celsius. Heat waves and floods led to summer shortfalls, driving up tea prices in Assam and West Bengal. India's average temperature of 25.75 degrees Celsius surpassed 2016, with peak highs in July, August, September, and October. Overall production from January through October decreased by 66 million kilos compared to the same period in 2023. The Indian Tea Association projects a total decline of 110 to 120 million kilos for the year. 2 weeks ago, it snowed in Manohar, India, a prime tea-producing region in the Nilgiri Mountains. Temperatures plummeted below zero Christmas week, but daytime highs of 22 degrees C were recorded, attracting many tea tourists to the popular tea-growing region. October in China was the hottest in 123 years, and July and August were the hottest months in history. Shanghai reported its highest average temperature since 1873, and the national average reached 10.9 degrees C, that's 51.66 Fahrenheit. 4 of the 10 hottest years occurred during this century in China. Yunnan experienced extreme weather events and unusual variability in temperature and rainfall. In contrast, Kenya reported good production totals that increased by 7% through October. The exports surged by 20% during the first 10 months of the year, despite increased temperatures and extreme weather events. The Tea Board of Kenya reported export volume stood at 50 million kilos, an increase from 414.5 million kilos during the same period in 2023. The sales volume reached 155 billion Kenyan shillings, about 1.19 billion U.S. dollars, compared to the 1.09 billion U.S. dollars in 2023. Full-year estimates were expected to exceed the 1.39 billion earned in 2023. Secondary producing tea regions such as Australia also reported weather anomalies. According to the Bureau of Meteorology, last year was the second hottest in Australia since record-keeping began. The national mean temperature was 1.46 degrees C above the 1961 through 1990 average, with the highest minimum temperature in 115 years. Pakistan's summer temperatures reached 52 C, that's 125.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and the country experienced a devastating monsoon. Climate Copernicus, the European Union's climate change service, reports that it is, quote, virtually certain, end quote, that global temperatures will exceed 1.5 degrees C above pre-industrial norms. Meteorologists recorded unusually intense rainfall in much of Europe and Northern America, with wetter-than-average conditions in North Africa, northeastern Russia, eastern China, northwestern Australia, southernmost Africa, and Brazil. Researchers in Barcelona, Spain, found that high concentrations of micro and nanoplastics in tea made from tea bags packed in standard packaging materials are absorbed into the body. A write-up in the peer-reviewed journal Chemisphere revealed that tea bags were the source of billions of particles. Human ingestion after steeping reached concentrations with unknown health impacts. Several standard forms of packaging, including nylon 6, cellulose, and propylene, were evaluated. Quote, polypropylene releases approximately 1.2 billion particles per milliliter, with an average size of 136.7 nanometers. Cellulose releases about 135 million particles per milliliter, with an average size of 244 nanometers, while nylon 6 releases 8.18 million particles per milliliter, with an average size of 138.4 nanometers, according to the study conducted by the Autonomous University of Barcelona, UAB. The study replicated the findings of earlier researchers who found that food packaging is a significant source of micro and nanoplastic, that's MNPL, contamination, and inhalation and ingestion are the main routes of human exposure. When mucus-producing intestinal cells were exposed to the particles from packaged tea, they were found to enter the cell nucleus. The study by the mutagenesis group of the UAB Department of Genetics and Microbiology shows for the first time that these particles can be absorbed by human intestinal cells, thus reaching the bloodstream and spreading throughout the body. Results of a 2023 study of commercially available tea bags published in the Journal of Hazardous Materials estimated that tea bags made from polylactic acid, PLA, released about 1 million nanoparticles per tea bag. Quote, results show that PLA NPLs are present in high uptake rates, especially in mucoselector cells, and bile persisted in the tissue after 72 hours of exposure, end quote. No cytotoxicity was observed 48 hours after exposure. Exposure to nanoplastics is widespread. They are present in the environment due to the degradation of plastic waste. Nanoplastics are also found in cosmetics, scrubs, exfoliating, and cleaning products. Another source is migration from food packaging, such as polyethylene rice cooking bags, ice cube bags, and tea bags. The 2023 study found popular plant-based plastics, PLAs, release nanoparticles that do not readily degrade. The UAB researchers noted there are no standardized test methods to assess MNPL contamination from common food packaging materials. The study concluded, quote, "It is critical to develop standardized test methods to assess MNPO contamination released from plastic food contact materials and formulate regulatory policies to mitigate and minimize this contamination effectively," end quote. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Hundreds of tea professionals, educators, and enthusiasts will travel from around the world to attend the UC Davis Tea Institute's 10th anniversary colloquium on January 30th at UC Davis. This year's theme is Tea and Peace, Bringing Communities Together. Joining us today is Professor Catherine Burnett, an expert in East Asian studies and the art and cultural history of China, and founder and director of the Institute. She describes how, in 2012, their mutual fascination with tea brought together a research cluster of faculty and librarians to establish a group that would become the Institute and organize its first colloquium. The collaboration inspired an innovative global educational hub offering advanced studies, continuing education leading to professional certifications, and a new book series, Global Tea Studies, by Brill Publishing. Plans include constructing an on-campus tea center equipped with a sensory theater, processing center, exhibition hall, classrooms, and space for public display of tea art and cultural materials. Catherine Burnett is a professor of art history and a 2023 Public Scholarship and Engagement Fellow who co-chairs the UC Davis University's Department of Art and Art History. She is a faculty affiliate of the East Asian Studies Program who travels frequently to the Tea Lands. Catherine holds degrees from both the University of Michigan and Wellesley College and has taught at the University of California, Davis, for 27 years. I'd like to welcome Professor Catherine P. Burnett, the founder and director of the Global Tea Institute for the Study of Tea Culture and Science at the University of California, Davis.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be with you, Dan. It's always fun to talk with you, and I know we're going to have some fun stuff to talk about today.
What was your inspiration?
Decades ago, when I was writing my dissertation, I discovered that there was an interest in originality in the late Ming. It went above and beyond anything that was of aesthetic value. It was the paradigmatic value of the time. And what I was surprised to discover was that one of the main theorists was a friend of the main potter, Yixingwe Potters. And I went, I've got to write an article about this. Well, years pass, I don't write it because, you know, tea is not a big deal in American studies, but it's still in the back of my mind. I had been made in 2012 the director of the East Asian Studies program on campus, and I was looking for ways to make this program higher profile on campus. And our wonderful librarian, Axel Borg, said, you know, you got to meet this guy, Daryl Cordy. He has the major grocery, and he's a world expert on food and beverages, and he collects Japanese art. And you're the Asianist on campus. He will want to talk to you. And I'm like, no, he won't. I do China. He's interested in Japan. He's not going to want to talk to me, but thank you. And Axel kept saying, no, you got it. You must talk to him. Okay. So we arranged to have lunch. Daryl goes, you want to go to this fancy restaurant or dim sum? I'm like, let's find out what Daryl would go for dim sum, because he's this internationally acclaimed food expert. He's an advisor to the Smithsonian. He's an advisor to the Robert Mondavi Institute for Wine and Food Studies on campus. I mean, amazing guy. Daryl had been collecting incense burners. So I brought a few of my incense burners that I'd gotten in China, and some of them were in the shape of teapots. So I brought some teapots as well. So we're sitting there, and Daryl suddenly looks down and he sees these things on the table, and he picks up a little teapot and he goes, where'd these come from? I said, I brought them, blah, 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 blah. He says, Catherine, what I don't understand is why doesn't UC Davis study tea? And I went, oh, what a great question. I have this article that I've been trying to write for now decades. I've been made head of East Asian Studies. We have all these great people. So we created the All Things Tea Faculty Research Cluster. We applied for this grant. We did not get it. And later I talked to one of the reviewers and she said, oh, well, you weren't doing blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, we were. And I just went, we were too ahead of the curve. We're just way too ahead of the curve. But Daryl, and I really want to give him lots of credit here, he wouldn't let me stop. And he got me introduced to Wing Chi Ip, who you know.
Wing Chi Ip is a brilliant scholar, tea artist, collector, and owner of the Lakshya Tea House and Museum, which he founded in 1991 in Hong Kong Park.
And Wing Chi got me invited to speak at the Xiamen International Tea Fair in 2014. And I go to Xiamen and I give my little spiel. This is what we're proposing. This is what we're doing at UC Davis. And I'm figuring nobody's going to care because why would they? And the audience, I think I was on a panel with, I don't know who I was on the panel with, but almost all the questions were for me afterwards.
I was in the audience.
And people were like, this is great. Whoa. And they had all these ideas and they thought this was really fabulous. And I'm going, really? And they said, well, what are you going to do when you go home? And I said, well, I guess I'm going to talk to my chancellor. Development took me under their wing and for a year took me all around campus to all the departments that I'd already talked to on behalf of this All Things Tea Research Cluster, including grounds planning and facilities management and all these things. But now with development next to me, they're taking me even more seriously. And after a year of this, they say, now you can go talk to the provost. The office of the provost and your deans will give you some money for 2 years for startup funds. And we'll give you more startup money for 3 years. And let's see what you can do. Well, so that got us through, got us enough money to be able to start planning and organizing the colloquia. We'd done a sort of a test run in 2014 with Wing Chi and another speaker. 200 people showed up. It was phenomenal. And it was like, holy smokes. And so when we had the colloquium, I knew there we would attract some people, but 400 people registered out of where are they coming from? Across campus, across the region, Bay Area, flooding in. And then, so that's 2016, our first colloquium, and All Things Tea, something like that, for the first colloquium. And by 2017, 2018, we had the beginnings of our Tea Advisory Committee, an advisory board, which is a philanthropic board. And with the funds from this group, has given me the operating funds to run GTI from year to year. And so to organize the colloquia and bring in the speakers and host a few on-campus events. It's also such a joy because these people in the tea industry are so lovely. Ostensibly, they're competitors, but they work so nicely together. They all recognize that GTI is important. And I will tell you that when we were first getting going, people would come in the industry, would come up to me and say, Catherine, we've been waiting for this for 30 years. But UC Davis, this is perfect. because your mission is to educate and share knowledge. And we don't care if it's a green tea or a black tea or where it was from, if it's from China or Japan or India or Sri Lanka or Africa or, you know, Argentina or Colombia. So now our industry is composed of about 9 member companies, from national and international companies. We hope to continue to expand because this is how we get our operating funds.
One of the things I want to talk about is the hub concept that you've championed. Knowing that you're going to have professors sharing knowledge in a very sophisticated way and then disseminating it face-to-face 10,000 miles apart.
Great question. So a bunch of things. First of all, I'm going to do a little cheerleading for Davis before I launch into the hub. The reason why UC Davis is the amazingly perfect place, right time, right place, and we just got sort of lucky with that, is that not only is it a leader in agricultural studies nationally and internationally, often it's number one, or number one in nutrition studies, often. And number one or top ranked in so many other different fields, including things that don't get ranked. So because UC Davis is a large scale university, because we have over 100 undergraduate majors, because we have over 100 graduate programs, plus four colleges, 6 professional schools, we are the most comprehensive campus of all the 10 University of California campuses. We are the most comprehensive campus. And we're the world leader in ag and environmental studies and nutrition, and we've done wine and beer studies forever. And our mission is to teach, to research, spread knowledge through teaching and publication. So it's the perfect setup. And we believe in collaboration. So I've been actively talking to other universities around the world who have tea programs and they want to collaborate. Then you have to find somebody who actually does the collaboration, but at least we are opening up the bridges to enable these collaborations to take place. And that's really important. And so through these colloquia, let's say soft landing kinds of initiatives, we're spreading out, we've established a name, a brand, a reputation for excellence, even though we're very young. We've launched a professional tea certificate program, the UC Davis GTI Professional Tea Certificate Program. It went public last year for the first time. It will go public again in 2025 for the second offering. We're still working out some details, so we don't have a start date yet, but it's going to happen. We have a great lineup, and this is done at the request of the industry. And largely, it is industry members who give individual lectures as part of this short course. For the last 7 years, we've offered a co-taught course to our undergraduates, mostly as a first-year seminar that is capped at 19 students for first-years and transfer students who are new to campus. And it's a nice way to get them comfortable on our campus because it's a big campus. We have about 40,000 students now. And last year, we ran it as a large enrollment class, again, co-taught across the disciplines. We're going to incentivize faculty to create courses that will be approved, and so that we can develop an undergraduate program in global tea studies. Instead of teaching one course, they can use that time to write the course. Mm-hmm. And the money goes okay to the department, but the faculty get the time to write the course and get it pushed through the system. You need, I think, around 6 to 10 courses for an undergraduate minor, and then over time grow the number of courses to a major. But this is happening on this campus, which means that this is going to be the first, and as far as I can tell, only place in the U.S. to have a global tea studies degree. It's an umbrella program that would engage faculty from across the various colleges, from the humanities and social sciences, engineering, sciences, agriculture, nutrition. So whatever department you're in, you could have a course that could be part of this program. So that's in the works. Students have been contacting me and saying, I've just found out about GTI. Can I come to Davis? Like, yep, just get yourself into the system. You've got to apply formally. Then once you've been accepted, then you can work with whatever faculty member in your area of interest to create, do an independent study. And as an individual course or an honors thesis or an MA, MFA, and PhD, we have graduate students in doing graduate work in all sorts of disciplines. We want to encourage that. We want to continue that.
So let's discuss how the GTI colloquia are structured and then get specific about this year's 10th anniversary event.
One of the things that we felt our way towards was to have an event that would engage culture and society, science, health, and the industry. And we sort of stumbled on that fairly early on, didn't realize how phenomenal that was as a concept, but it has worked beautifully. It always makes me sad that we can only do one day because it's like worth a whole week of talks, but nobody has that kind of time. But in having those different approaches, whatever theme we set, and the theme is always something that is a bigger idea that enables whatever speaker to address the theme according to their research interests. So there's a lot of flexibility. But what happens is that the effect of the event is like a kaleidoscope. So that you get this perspective and then it shifts a little bit and you get that perspective and then it shifts a little bit and you get a completely different vision of tea and then it shifts again and again. And so the sum of the whole is far greater than the individual parts. I know there's this way of saying it. I'm not saying it very well, but the overall effect is like, it always leaves me going, wow, that was really inspirational. And the ideas that it sparks in from the speakers to the audience, the ideas that the audience gets themselves and makes these connections across the disciplines and also from the informal conversations that people have in the audience amongst themselves, the networking opportunities just for thinking or for business, whatever it is, are phenomenal. So I'm really proud that we've done that and that we've consistently kept it. And that, frankly, we, as much as, except for the COVID years when we couldn't meet in person, it's in person, on site, so that there's this human engagement.
The speakers you have invited reinforce the idea that human engagement over tea encouraged civilized cultural exchange.
You can do things by Zoom, and we're grateful for it, like this opportunity to speak, you know, today, but there's no substitute for human engagement. This year, to celebrate our 10th anniversary, I really wanted us to think something really big. And what is bigger than world peace? Now, I knew that we couldn't enact world peace, you know, that's a little too ambitious, but we can think about it. And the more we can think about it, the better it is for us. So we set the theme of tea and peace, bringing communities together. In the fall, our undergraduate Global Tea Club organized a sip-in for peace on the quad so that, you know, it was a way to advertise GTI and the club activities, but also to set the theme from the students' perspective. And then in January 30th, we'll have our 10th anniversary colloquium on site in the UC Davis Conference Center. Please register. Their link is open now, and it's important that people come. We will record it, but the recordings never go up until several months later because they have to be processed for equal accessibility. And then in the spring, we're going to have some remarkable artists come to campus to exhibit their work and talk about their work and do a performance, a limited audience participation for that. Only 25, 30 people will be able to attend that. But for the talks, it'll be open. All of this will be held in the Minetti Schrem Museum of Art. And then in spring quarter, this year we'll have an exhibition in the Minetti Schrem Museum of Art. There will be lots of things to come and see and think about. I hope that people will think about the ways that tea can bring peace to us individually, whether it's just a cup at home and it soothes you in the moment, or you share with a friend and that communication between friends is so soothing and inspiring and helpful, or more broadly among industry or business or the governments and our nations, because, you know, we're people first.
Register to attend the January 30th colloquium at globaltea.ucdavis.edu or visit the T-Biz blog. Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.